A frequent criticism of networking by IT people is that it's too hard. It's a dark art. And then application architecture gets thrown on the whiteboard and the network is represented by that generic cloud that means not much to anybody. And why? Why is that? I mean, I guess the answer is networking can indeed be hard. There is a lot to creating the configurations that support QoS for voice over IP, solid routing topologies, firewall policies, link encryption, and so on. And so, no wonder the network looks like a cloud to the uninitiated. Many of us have developed a great deal of CLI foo just to get these features working, only to find that our CLI foo has grown weak with the next firmware upgrade or equipment replacement. So, what if we could make network operations simpler? What if it wasn't such a sigh-inducing project to bring new network gear online and integrate it into our environments? Cisco Meraki is our sponsor today, and simplified networking is a big part of the value that they bring. And if you think keeping things simple is just for the SMBs of the world, think again. Cisco Meraki has a home in Fortune 500 companies too. I am Ethan Banks, and with me is Greg Farrell. Joining us from Cisco Meraki is Simon Thompson. Simon, welcome to Packet Pushers, and please introduce yourself to the audience.
Thanks for that great introduction, Ethan. My name is Simon Thompson. I lead the product marketing team here at Cisco Meraki's headquarters in San Francisco. So I am out of the UK originally, but moved over to the US and absolutely loving working with Meraki today.
Well, let's jump right into the show, Simon. Before you rang us up, I had Meraki pegged as a supplier of cloud-managed enterprise wireless networks. That's kind of the box that I had put Meraki in. And you guys do have a great wireless product, but as I dug in here and as you informed us, there's a whole lot of other enterprise networking products that you deal with too. Why don't you walk us through the lineup?
Yeah, absolutely. So wireless is where it all started. The company actually was started out of a research project that our founders undertook whilst they were students at MIT. This was in the very early 2000s. And their project was called RoofNet, which was all about mesh wireless networking. And they created their own access points as part of this project and formulated a really cool new way of managing those APs centrally. So those of you who've been around in networking for a while, you'll remember that in the early 2000s, many of the APs that we were deploying were configured one at a time. It was really not very easy to do at an enterprise level. So the market was starting to move towards a kind of a controller-based, centralized approach for managing APs. And what our founders started to do was to implement this in software. So this was really the where everything started. And so Meraki did start off as a wireless company. It's absolutely correct. But then we realized that the architecture that we'd created to support this would apply very nicely to other areas of networking and indeed to IT more generally.
Let's pause here just for a second and highlight this. You were talking about wireless and the controller-based architecture for controlling APs, as in, I've got an AP, a lightweight access points were a big deal where it didn't have a whole lot of intelligence. Its whole point in life was to tunnel home to a central controller where it got its policy and knew what everything from what radio frequencies to be on, what SSIDs to broadcast, what encryption schemes to follow, et cetera, was all done by the controller and told to it that way. But you contrasted that in saying, well, we said, no, we don't want to do that approach. We want to do software. Can you highlight how that's different?
Yeah, so essentially all of those components that a lightweight AP, a thin AP, as we sometimes call it, needed to pick up from the controller, we're doing exactly the same thing, but we're obtaining that data from a cloud-based architecture. So in other words, we have servers sitting in data centers, multiple data centers in the US and right around the world, which the APs phone home to. It really is like that concept. So you plug the thing in, it's going to automatically call to the cloud, and it's going to pull down a config that's appropriate for its serial number. And of course, if that's part of a broad network of APs, then it will just join that and take on the same settings as the other APs have.
And this approach is what you're saying, and then we started applying it to other elements of network infrastructure.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Such as.
So in 2010, we added security appliances. So this is like a UTM solution, really broad range of protection, firewall, content filtering, site-to-site VPN, lots and lots of features in there. And then to switches at the beginning of 2012. So we have a pretty comprehensive range of switching. And you know, for many people, of course, Cisco is already very broadly associated with switching. But what we've done is implement the same cloud-based managed approach, which just seems to scan really effectively across different pieces of kit.
Now, Meraki was acquired by Cisco. How many years ago was that now?
So that was in late 2012. So the company had already established itself quite well at this point. And I think the founders, were really quite confident in Meraki as a standalone business. But we were approached by Cisco, and obviously we made a great arrangement with them to keep the Meraki flavor the same, which is why the company still looks and feels very much as it did pre-acquisition.
And the switches that you... that are a part of your product line, are these actually unique Meraki switches, or is this actually a Cisco switch that maybe if we were Cisco engineers, we'd be already familiar with?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the ways in which we managed to keep ourselves as flexible and able to innovate the new features we add as rapidly as we can with as little outside intervention as possible is by designing both hardware and software to work very tightly together. So everything that Meraki sells is built from the ground up to interoperate with our cloud architecture. So that just gives our software engineers a lot of flexibility into how they bring new features to market.
Now, that's a different way of engineering. If you're not used to thinking about making devices, if you think devices should be standalone and have everything in self-contained, like, isolated, introverted devices, whereas you're sort of saying every device should be referring back to the cloud, does that change or limit the features in your product? Does that restrict you in any way? Or does it just mean you focus on certain features over others? I mean, what's the trade-off there?
Yeah, I don't really see a trade-off particularly. The devices are certainly reliant on the cloud in order to obtain their configuration. But the flexibility means that our engineers can push out new features to products without having to even instigate a firmware update. So sometimes you'll see in the Meraki dashboard, which is our management platform, you'll see things start to appear which just simply weren't there before. So you're immediately able to start benefiting from them. So that's the kind of benefit that we derive from centralizing everything through that cloud architecture. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've looked at the Meraki product as part of prepping for the show. Because there are things that you get that are not there, I think. But for everything that's not there, I'm getting a whole lot more. Like that management and the visibility tooling all just built in is a huge plus.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm a former network engineer myself, so I remember command line interfaces. I remember having to look things up on Google because I couldn't remember how to configure things or how to just simply get basic information out of the switch. One of the things I found so refreshing when I came to Meraki was, look, I can immediately see here in a very plain English form what's going on in my network. And we found so many customers who just have very little idea what's actually happening on their network segments. It's not because their equipment can't tell them. It's just because it's just too difficult and too time consuming to go and interrogate.
Yeah, like the example I was thinking of was like when you plug two switches together or plug switches together inside of a network, your visibility tool, your web interface shows me which switches are connected to which and shows me which port on which one in the web page. I don't have to go and install something else. I don't have to go and stand up a server and then configure the software on the server and then point it to pull at a switch. So there's this different way of coming about your products that I think if you're coming from a more traditional mindset or, where we've been for the last 30 years, this is a difference that Meraki brings.
For sure. I definitely think that, I mean, of course you can achieve these things with all the other solutions out in the marketplace. You have a decent manager of managers out there. You can go and start polling devices, looking at ports and building up topologies, that kind of thing. We have all of that just built in out of the box. The network administrator doesn't have to go and manually set that stuff up. That's just there ready to use from the word go.
So I want to pick apart this cloud management thing for a minute here. I know it's popular and we've had a lot of vendors come on and talk about that, but there's some possible negatives to this too. One is security. Now we're talking about managing my network infrastructure and all that data about my network infrastructure living up in the cloud. How does Meraki keep that secure?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is probably the number one question that we get as soon as we start introducing this to anybody. So it really is... So first of all, bear in mind that Meraki's built its entire business around this architecture. So getting security right is fundamental to our success. We have SSE 16 certified data centers. We are PCI compliant to level one. In the US, we're HIPAA compliant for patient healthcare protection. And everything is fully encrypted. So your management traffic, and it is an out-of-band solution, by the way. So customer traffic, user traffic on local area networks does not pass through the cloud. That would not be scalable in any way. So all we're doing here is just taking the out-of-band control traffic into the cloud, and that's fully encrypted and on bespoke software that we've written ourselves. So we're not even using off-the-shelf databases, for example.
Yeah, obviously, none of the traffic is being routed, none of the user traffic. Again, right. Just the control traffic is what's showing up in the cloud through secure channels. Now, you said a few things here. You mentioned your data centers are PCI compliant, HIPAA. You also said one that I hadn't heard before, so I'll be the dumb guy and ask that question. SSE 16? What is that certification?
I do know that it is one of the fundamental standards for cloud-based data center services, which, of course, many...
SSAE 16 was drafted with the intention and purpose of updating U.S. service organization reporting standards. So it's a statement on a standards for attestation engagements.
Mm. Yeah.
It's an American Institute of Public Accountants.
Right. And we do perform sort of daily penetration testing. We even have a rewards program for any potential bugs that people identify with the cloud infrastructure. So it's something we take extremely seriously, so much so that we've built a sub-web page on our site to address this, which is meraki.cisco.com/trust. It's a great place to go and just look at the background to see how in the ways in which we protect our customers.
Another cloud operations question here. If I can't get to the cloud, I can't manage my stuff. And then if my stuff can't get to the cloud, it can't be managed. So how do we mitigate that risk?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the number two. That's the next huge question that we get every time we introduce Meraki. And we have had competition in the past trying to indicate that you can't run your Meraki network if it's not able to reach the cloud, which is simply not the case. So the cloud is only used in order to make configuration changes to the equipment, and in the other direction to retrieve the monitoring information that we collect. So the deep packet inspection we perform on traffic passing through Meraki gear, that's getting relayed back to the cloud so that it can be presented to the network admin on their browser. So those are the only requirements there. And so I'm sure you can see that a local area network is going to operate independently of those two functions, but you wouldn't be able to make config changes. You wouldn't be able to monitor what's going on those switches. So we, APs and so on. And we do have customers who run this kind of isolated local area network configuration, like on cruise ships, that kind of thing. It's definitely something that we want to make customers really aware of. Of course, internet disconnections and cloud outages are not that common nowadays. I think it's fair to say the internet has reached a level of reliability where a lot of businesses are using it 100% for their connections to the outside world. So it's not that common that we're going to have any problem there. But we do operate these multiple data centers. The configurations for all Meraki gear is replicated in three different locations and different servers so that we can easily get customers redirected if there's a problem with a particular data center.
Yeah, I remember reading that on the website, multiple data centers and multiple links from each data center into the internet. So there's a lot of redundancy and thought that went into making your Meraki data in the cloud highly available to you. So as long as your internet connection is up, you're going to be good to go.
Yeah, that's it. And you know, when you make a change, let's say you go in and make a config change your VLAN, something like that. What you're actually doing is you're effectively working on what I call a master copy of the configuration that actually sits there on those servers. That is then synced down on a regular basis to the hardware itself. So what you're running on local hardware is a copy of that master configuration, which is kept as close to real time, up to date as possible.
Now, one more question here. Do I have to manage every feature via the cloud portal, or are there some things that I would manage by logging in locally to the device?
Yeah, that's another good one. If you are getting connected for the first time, of course, we go into some environments where people maybe don't have a DHCP server in use, or maybe they need to access the internet via proxy. So we have local interfaces which will allow you to do those basics. They are designed really to just get you connected so that you can be managed via the cloud centrally. But you know, there are some quite handy tools built in as well. So for example, on the APs, we have a site survey tool built directly into interface of the AP. So you don't need to have your cloud connection in order to be able to go around and do a site survey. You know, the sticking your AP on the pole, and you don't need it to be actually routable back to the internet in order to be able to gather that data.
The whole thrust of this conversation here is simplifying network operations. We talk about cloud management and what that's buying us. So let's talk about the process of standing up new infrastructure. Now, normally, my background, network engineering, I take a new switch out of the box. The first thing I do is plug a console cable in, get it up to a prompt, probably upload some firmware to get it to a standard rev, and then I've got a template of a lot of commands that I'm going to fill in, and it's a thing. You know, it's like, oh, I guess today I'm going to spend my day unboxing gear and bringing it online, which is not the Meraki way, as I understand it. You guys, it's more of a zero-touch provisioning style.
Yeah, you see, you're taking me on a trip down memory lane here. I'm starting to remember what my life was like when I started. So the first switches I started working on were Baystack switches. Some of you will be old enough to remember those.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Right. So this is exactly the experience that I used to have. Receive a whole bunch of boxes, and the licenses are all in some other boxes somewhere that have got lost. My console cables got lost, or I've loaned it to somebody and they didn't give it back to me. And so I got to unbox the things and do this pre-staging activity where I've got to set everything up, configure it just so, and then get it deployed. But at that time, you even had to do this if you needed to replace a switch from a stack. Maybe you had a failed switch. You'd have to configure that switch manually to replicate the config that the failed one had. Otherwise, the stack wouldn't work properly. So this was the kind of day-to-day practical nightmares that existed at that time. And of course, now I live in this kind of dream world where I can just pre-stage equipment without ever even seeing it. I don't actually need that equipment to pass by my desk at all. It can be just shipped directly to wherever it's going to be deployed. All I need is its serial number so I can start setting it up on the dashboard.
And the serial number is the key here. You plug the device in, it phones home to the cloud and then registers its serial number with home base, gets popped into the proper management domain, and there it is, ready for provisioning. So what happens next at that point?
Yes, exactly that. And so what happens is you let's say you're a brand new customer, then you are going to set up an account on the Meraki dashboard. You get prompted to do that, by the way. If you go to dashboard.meraki.com, it's going to give you a login, but it's also going to give you the option to set up an account if you don't already have one. And once that account is set up, then you can begin to obviously tie that to the orders that you've placed. So your serial numbers will start to appear in your inventory, and you can then apply those to what we describe as networks, which is really just a logical grouping of equipment. You know, it could be on a per site basis, could be on a per country basis, whatever format customers like to use. So once you've got that equipment ready to go, you've got all kinds of ways of managing large numbers of equipment simultaneously. So if equipment is, let's say APs, if they're all in a single network, you go in and make a config change one time, it's going to impact every AP that's in that network. So multi-site deployment and changes becomes really super easy to do. And this works really well with switches as well. So it's the idea that you can pre-stage all your VLANs, all of your routing functions before you actually deploy those switches. And then, of course, if you've done your homework correctly, you're going to be able to... they're just going to appear online in the dashboard. You'll know they're online. And then you're up and running.
Now, is that a switch template as such?
We do have templates, yeah. We have the option for customers to use templates for switches and for switches, security appliances, and APs. The templates are huge because you can now go in and just work on a template. And of course, every time you make a change, it's going to automatically replicate to every AP switch, whatever, that's associated to that or bound to that template.
Okay, everybody using that template is going to get that change.
Yes, yes. So I think one of the things that you'll know the good old Unix term, with great power comes great responsibility. We certainly do make it easy for people to manage literally thousands of devices simultaneously. So there is some care required in getting that done correctly.
But the point is, I'm not managing one device at a time. I've got a tool here that allows me to make a mass change if I need, and that would include things like creating a new VLAN or some new standard comes in. Something as simple as a message of the day banner, I suppose, is blasted out to everybody through a templating feature.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I think is really nice is that if you are a really large-scale multi-site, like maybe a multinational retailer, and you've got hundreds or thousands of locations to deploy to, you can set up a template in such a way that it will automatically bind a switch of a particular type, for example, into the template as soon as it's powered up for the first time. So you don't even need to manually go and add it. So that's just a way to again, streamline the experience for the network administrator.
Of course, automation is all the rage these days. Does Meraki have an API if I wanted to use some kind of a program or a script to do some provisioning?
Yeah, we got we do work with some service providers, so we have some provisioning APIs built in, enabling them to automatically build networks from, for example, CSV lists of serial numbers, so they can quite easily get set up. APIs are an increasing side of what we're doing here at Meraki, enabling customers to build their own solutions around the information we gather. So there's a few examples of that. That's definitely one of them.
So what about more complex things? I mean, once I've got the switch on, that's great, but there's certain features that are just... another trip down memory lane. QoS, for me, I built a lot of QoS configs, and they were just these monster paragraphs long defining marking and different throttling policies and exactly how it was going to apply what to which DSCP value and so on. And they went on and on and on. And if I got switches involved because there was a VoIP phone hanging off the end of this thing, it just never ended. The QoS lines were astonishing. So please tell me you've simplified that.
Yeah, I remember the same thing, and from my memory, you had to be so verbose. You had to tell the switch absolutely everything, so there was nothing assumed from the word go. There were no default configuration settings. Now, I'll admit that it's been a few years since I've been playing on switch command lines, so maybe things have moved on there. But that was certainly how it was in my day. We had to configure every single thing. So defining QoS, defining all the classes and applying them to different protocols.
Yeah, it depends on the device you're on, but yeah, there's still a lot of configuration. There is some auto QoS features and functionality depending on the platform, but what it gives you and so on is anyway, what's the Meraki way?
Meraki way is we essentially just go in and pre-assign classes to quality of service buckets. So we are able to automatically start taking advantage of the QoS features in the switch. We even have some settings which, for example, say things like best for voice over IP. So you can turn it into a little bit more into a less of a dark art and a little bit more sort of plain English speaking, if you like. So that we do that, for example, on our wide area network intelligence, where we're able to literally configure something which says best for VoIP, and that works in the background on a MOS score standard to ensure that the forwarding path across a wide area is taking best advantage. Is best suited to that type of traffic. So if there's any change in performance, maybe you get degradation, then it can automatically flip across to a backup link.
Oh, it's almost an SD-WAN kind of a feature there.
Yeah, in fact, we're starting to use that term tentatively at this point. So you will probably hear Meraki using the term SD-WAN going forward. It's we started using the term Intelligent WAN or IWAN, which some of you will know from Cisco. So the functionality always with Meraki is not identical. We don't aim to do feature parity with anybody else, including the traditional Cisco platforms. So for us, it's all about what's the problem we're trying to solve and how are we going to implement it in a way that's easy for the admin to deal with.
So this is an interesting little diversion here. When you say Intelligent WAN, then you're not actually talking about Cisco's IWAN. You're talking about a Meraki similar feature, but not the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. I would say always for us, it's a question of going back to the plain English. An Intelligent WAN, what are we trying to do? We're trying to make sensible decisions about which forwarding path we should be using. And so we have implemented that from the ground up, saying, okay, we need to be able to ensure we get voice on the right path in particular or other latency sensitive applications. And so how are we going to implement that in a way which is intuitive for a network admin to go and set up?
So it's not DMVPN and PFR version 3 and there's several other components that make up the IWAN solution. It's just a simplified way to get the base functionality that you're really looking for out of your WAN. Make sure the voice traffic gets delivered in a timely and low jitter way and so on. Those are the big value things that people want out of their wide area.
Yeah, and that's you bring up a good point there, which is another kind of slight diversion in a sense, and that is the level of configurability, of customizability. So it's a trade-off. We have made a decision as a business to make an offering to the market which is, you know, simple. The emphasis is on that simplicity. So we are trying to avoid providing too many what we call nerd knobs. For setting things up, you know, just exactly the way you might want them to be. And of course, for some engineers, that's going to be very painful, especially if the more experienced ones who already know what they're doing. But it is a trade-off.
On the other hand of this, if you're a reseller and you're providing this product, you can manage an awful lot of sales and get your work done without having to futz around doing pointless activities. You're just getting the job done and moving on to the next one. So I've been on a bit of a simplicity blitz on the show recently because I've sort of had the realization that all of these advanced features that we used to use don't have so much relevance in the modern era as convergence happens, as things move to wireless. Like, a lot of the features that we have in switches are based on the fact that cabling was expensive and mm-hmm. hard to run, right? And now we have wireless and a whole bunch of things that we used to worry about, like spanning tree, right? Just disappeared with wireless, right? We don't have it with wireless. So there's a case to be made that the simplicity is actually powerful in terms of it simplifies and makes it more reliable because none of these enhancements or fancy functions or, and it also avoids a thing called hero culture. A lot of the times people get caught up in the, I can do the fancy stuff and be a hero and do something really fancy. And then of course it blows up. And if you're the only person who can fix it, guess what? You're the only person who's going to get called out at 2 a.m. or, you know, that's not a feature, that's a bug. What you want to be doing is, you know, getting it in, getting it working, having it stable and reliable, and then spending your time doing something else, like studying something or, you know, moving on to the next project.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, technology is throwing so much at us. We're asked to take on so much all the time, and it only goes in one direction, right? It only increases. So anything that we can do to streamline technologies which were complicated by requirement in the past. I mean, networks needed to be complex because they were being built from sort of very raw silicon, and you know, we've just moved past that point, so we can build on top of the shoulders of giants, so to speak. From when I was a systems engineer, just another spin on this whole simplicity thing, a systems engineer at a previous company that will go unnamed, I was out there in front of customers pushing some pretty advanced network virtualization technology, and you know, one of the frustrations I had was that this technology was extremely cool and could do some very clever stuff indeed, but it was just so difficult to convey to people because they had limited time to listen to me, limited attention spans, and really some of this stuff is complex to figure out before you understand just how cool it is. I think one of the things about Meraki is it's so instantly accessible. You can just see its advantage as soon as you start using it.
Just one final point on that is, if you've got a nice, reliable, stable network, then you can start to support more networks. So in this case, if you're still doing super fancy Ethernet switching, campus and data center, you haven't got enough time to run wireless and security infrastructures. And your security tooling is really, really powerful as well. I don't know if we've touched on that yet, but you know, the content filtering, the intrusion detection, the identity management system so you can log people coming in, the L7 traffic inspection. You won't have time to do that if you're spending all of your life futzing around with the, you know, connecting stuff to a network type stuff.
Yeah, I couldn't say it better. I think it is a question of what was the thing which was actually taking up so much time in the past? It was actually remembering how to configure all these different pieces of hardware I've got in front of me, all the different commands that I have to get familiar with. Even just iOS on its own, it's a monster to get to grips with. And you know, whilst it does enable you to get really far into very bespoke configurations, the reality is that the really smart stuff that all our network engineers out there is how networks actually function and operate. And so we try and build on that.
Let me deviate a little bit into this security model that you've got, because it is a little bit different in that you can put these appliances, you have these cloud-managed security appliances, and I believe they're based on SourceFire, which is the acquisition Cisco made. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the really nice thing about this from our perspective is we were working with prior to their acquisition by Cisco, which followed ours. So we've just been able to obviously deepen that relationship now.
Right. So I can put these boxes in, and it's not just a firewall, it's a whole bunch of stuff. Like as I said, L7 inspection, You've got content filtering, so you can run them through. Is it content? Is it proxy based, or is it just inspection based, application inspection based?
So with the content filtering, the way it works is we work with a third party who maintains a gigantic database. And so our customers go in and choose from about 80 different categories of content types. Mm-hmm. When they select one of those, we download a massive database for that category to their local security appliance, their local UTM box. And that is then able to handle the filtering from that point forward.
Matt, that database is a list of who's naughty and who's nice, as
yes.
I like to say.
Yeah. And we have, obviously, we have the ability to go in and deal with any false positives that we might have and vice versa. Right. So we can.
Do I have to configure clients, or is it done just in line? So the traffic goes through the security appliance and it's like an IDS functionality?
Yeah, 100% in line. So it is IDS, IPS on the appliance with the source fire. And you even get the full reporting in there showing you all of the snort signatures. You can go and look those up if you want to get into the details.
Security appliances, especially a UTM box, has a bazillion nerd knobs to be twisting. Right. Is this another simplified approach?
Well, it certainly does have a lot of, I mean, we refer to this internally as a bit of a Swiss Army knife product. It has so many features, and we have to go and remind our sales teams occasionally, you know, to not refer to it as a firewall, because it's so much more than that. A great example is the site-to-site VPN. This is a technology which I'm sure you guys will have worked with in the field, and it can be extremely painful setting these things up. Meraki's approach is different because it's cloud managed. We're actually able to instruct the security appliances on how to punch through network address translation so that they can easily build connections within a matter of seconds without having to go and manually configure all of the various steps for the VPN itself. So all you're doing is just selecting up some subnets and saying, I want to join those from site A to site B, share them between, and choose between a hub and spoke configuration, and then you're off to the races.
And then off you go. Yeah, that makes sense. And that actually, auto QoS, auto VPN, complex feature deployment made straightforward. I get that. That's good. I wanted to talk about troubleshooting a little bit here, because a lot of this has the... You know, if I'm a small IT group, I'm managing equipment that's far away from me. I'm looking for tools that make my life easier when I'm trying to troubleshoot something that's far away. I was digging through some of the specs, and I noticed your switches seem to have what I believe are called time domain reflectometers built in. I can tell how long a cable is. Is that right? Did I get that right?
Yeah, you did. Yeah, and it's such a great term, isn't it? I have TDRs and all that stuff. We don't use that terminology ourselves.
No, it wasn't on the website. I was going back to a Cat 6500 module that was like special because it was had a TDR built in. Oh, and you paid extra for that. And then I'm looking at the Meraki gear, going, do they all have that functionality built in?
Yes, all built in. So you can run this with no interruption to service for the user if they're running gig or higher. And it's going to basically check the integrity of the pairs within your twisted pair cabling. And it's also going to do a resistance test, so you can get an approximate length for that cable. So obviously that's useful to determine. If you're far away, it's going to help you determine, are we going over structured building cabling here, or is it maybe just a patch cable? So it's just going to give you an indication of the length there.
I also noticed heavy use of LLDP, and it seemed to have the management system seemed to have awareness of the switches, what's on either end, and then could build you an infrastructure diagram based on that information.
Yeah, we call it topology. And for me, I try to convince people of this. They don't always listen. But what I love about this is that the topology map, frankly, just makes those Visio diagrams redundant, because you are dealing with something completely real time that's showing you in a very visual form how your network infrastructure is interconnected. You've got full LDP happening right across the network, CDP as well. So we're able to interrogate both Meraki and non-Meraki devices supporting those protocols, so that we can show, you know, how many ports we've got active, what's the kind of bandwidth that we've got, how many clients do we have connected to each device, that kind of stuff. And it's just very visually appealing when you look at it, and it's created dynamically. So when you load the page, it's actually polling the equipment to establish its interconnectivity status and showing that to the admin.
That was the best case scenario there, an all Meraki network where I've got a mix of Meraki and Cisco and Juniper and HP. I mean, how well does it work in that scenario?
Yeah, it's going to be limited to what those devices give us by way of information on LLUP. So we can certainly show normally things like the operating system, how many ports are available, that kind of thing. So it's not designed to be a complete multi-vendor management solution. It's more that you're at least going to be able to identify what this box is, so that you can, you know, you can picture its place in the topology. That's the intent. If you need to go further with a multi-vendor network deployment, then you'd probably would want to go for a manager of managers.
Sure. Yeah.
One of the other nice ones, talking about remote troubleshooting, is the packet capture functionality we have built in. So packet captures are really a great one. I remember setting a plug-in a hub or playing with a port mirror on a switch so I could get that traffic and see what's actually going on. But the key point is I had to be physically present there with the switch to be able to get that traffic off. With the cloud-based architecture, we're able to take advantage of this for packet capture. So as well as port mirroring, we can actually run a full-scale Wireshark packet capture remotely. So this is hugely powerful. You're dealing with a lean IT team, and you've got your responsibility for supporting hundreds or thousands of sites around the world, and you can literally go as far as a deep packet capture through the Meraki dashboards.
I'm going to say, I'm thinking about going back into contracting and consulting. Like, you know, if I can do packet captures remotely and do all this from the cloud, I could actually support quite a lot of customers from the comfort of my underpants. You know, this could be the arrival of networking underpants networking kind of
stuff.
That's
a vision I want to get out of my head as quickly as possible. but yes, technically you are absolutely correct. And you know, I usually describe it in that way. You know, people who are on the train commuting, they can literally take their smartphone out of their pocket and start to do some of this stuff. We even have mobile apps for smartphone and tablet.
So here's what I want to see at the next conference where Meraki's presenting. I want to be able to come to your booth and get a pair of networking underpants to put over the top of my chest.
You know what? I'm going to talk to our swag people and see what we can put together.
So, Simon, in that remote packet capture capability, I'm assuming what's really going on there is a directive is issued from the cloud that says, hey, device, capture X, whatever the parameters are. It builds a PCAP locally and then ships it up to the cloud.
Something yes, along those that's, lines? That's, yeah. That's exactly right. So, I mean, this is you could argue that technically this is one exception to our outer band policy that we typically run. So for a packet capture, which is normally just for a matter of seconds, because you normally often get such a large volume of data to look at, for that troubleshooting purpose, yes, we do need to pull that into the cloud so that we can then get it downloaded as a local PCAP file on the network admin's computer for interrogation. There is actually a simple interface built right into the dashboard, which will get you things like source and destinations. It doesn't go quite as deep as a Wireshark analysis would, but it's there anyway.
So, Simon, when we were talking initially, I had assumed that Meraki was an SMB play. That was really where you fit into the world and so on. But then as you were prepping us and we were talking about what we're going to discuss on the show, you said, no, we're installed in some Fortune 500 companies as well. So let me ask you some questions about scale so that the audience can understand just how big Meraki can go and where it might fit other than SMB. So one question here, how many devices can I manage in a single network?
It's a nice, easy to remember number. We're actually able to support up to about 10,000 devices within a single network. And that's actually, that limitation is only placed there by the database that we use in the cloud. So typically, we don't have, of course, many customers who exceed that, but we do have a few, actually. And so in those cases, we simply need to create multiple, what we call organizations, which are just the highest structural level in our database for management purposes. But generally 10,000, pretty healthy number. We can do that with no loss of performance as well because of the considerable efficiency of those databases I was talking about.
In other words, I go to my cloud management portal to look at my Meraki network. There's 10,000 devices in there. I'm not clicking, waiting, suicide, waiting. And then it comes
right
up.
Right, exactly. And, you know, there's some variability in this. If you go and pull up a page and you select every single column of information you're going to want to look at, there's actually a huge amount of data that we can pull right down to port level on a switch, for example. So inevitably, that's going to take a little bit of read time. But one of the things I think Meraki has done extremely well is the secret source stuff, if you like, behind the scenes is that database that we've written. It's incredibly efficient at reading thousands and thousands of data records per second.
can you deal with large network demands? Things like link redundancy is a good one.
Yes. Greg talked about, sounded quite affectionate about spanning tree earlier.
It's a special kind of, it's a special kind of love. Yeah.
Right, right. And so I've tried very hard to avoid it as much as possible in my career because it's created some significant nightmares. But yeah, spanning tree's in there. It needs to be because it's kind of like the lowest common denominator. Everybody supports it. So we have that ability to build a redundant network at that level. We also have physical redundancy. So with Meraki switching, for example, we've added a physical stacking capability, and we can build cross-stack link aggregation between access and aggregation layer. So that's just a really nice step forward. And then, of course, if customers want to go to layer 3, they want to push layer 3 to the edge, then they can do that as well. We have the support for OSPF built right in.
Oh, okay. So that was actually my next question. What dynamic routing protocols do you support? Yeah. And it sounds like the answer is OSPF.
Yes, OSPF is in there and static routes. So we don't support RIP, for example. I'm not sure how many people are still using that one. But the other one we often get asked about, of course, is ERGRP. So we're often asked about that one, and legitimately so. I think it was a very useful protocol to have for a fairly turnkey protocol for quite a long period of time. I think OSPF has become a little easier to get set up and operational with. So. Certainly is with the Meraki interface. We try to simplify the implementation of OSPF as much as we can, again, by providing sort of defaults, which the admin can just simply accept if they want to. So there's certainly always more that we can do, but we're trying, again, to get that balance right between simplicity of interface and features that are required.
Mm.
So yeah, redundancy is absolutely key, and you know, we think about this in other areas as well. We have backup capabilities on security appliances. On the wireless, we have the ability to do fallback from AP to AP, all of that good stuff. So it's all in there.
You said backup on the firewalls, as in two physical appliances, one's active, one's standby, that sort of a thing, or something different?
Yeah, it's like a warm spare setup. So we can have a security appliance set up ready with a live configuration, and so then it's just a question of failing it over automatically in software.
Mm, okay. IPv6 support, how are we doing there?
Yep. So this is now you're gonna get me on this one for sure. I mean, we certainly do have a support for IPv6 from a sort of bridging perspective. We are able to do IPv6 ACL on the switches, but that's about it at this point in time. So we're aware of the demand for it. I will say from my own personal experience that I think we've been talking about IPv6 for, 15 years now? Something along those lines, and it was always the next big thing. I think now you can construct a pretty good argument for it because we have run out of IP addresses.
We are finally getting to that point, I think. I mean, and I'm going to assume you're starting to get more customer inquiries. Hey, how about IPv6 support?
For sure, and that raises a good point in itself. A lot of the development that we do is based around the kind of feedback that we're getting from paying customers. So at the end of the day, we're a business, so we're interested in implementing the features our customers are looking for. IPv6 is certainly increasingly appearing on the radar.
Now, we were talking about the MX security appliance with a lot of SourceFire code inside. Would you position that in a larger shop? I mean, just from general talking to folks, not everyone sees it as a replacement for an ASA, let's say.
That I think a lot of this comes down to the kind of wide area connection that you have at this point in time. So some of them are getting extremely fast now, and they're really starting to push the capabilities of the hardware that we have. So we've got a lot of customers running sort of gig internet connections, which is just incredible to have. I mean, a lot of us have this at home nowadays, certainly not in the Bay Area. But yeah, it's coming quite broadly around the world now, and so that really is, if anything, the real challenge in front of us is getting hardware that can really do that full deep packet inspection and full layer 7 awareness with that level of throughput. So I would say for our security appliances, we certainly are positioning ourselves into smaller campuses, some mid-sized campuses. Once you get up to true sort of global scale routing functions, we're not probably going to be a suitable player in that space at this point. But it's a direction that we are interested in moving towards. We have been building more kind of enterprise-friendly features to enable us to push into larger accounts over time. So I expect that to follow on the security appliances as well.
And what about some of the more recent stuff that you've done? MDM, there's a new phone. Talk about that.
Yeah, so we again, thinking about this, the success of this overall approach that we started with the wireless switching and the security, we've applied that in a couple of other areas. So we're starting to think of ourselves as more than just a networking vendor, but really a cloud-managed IT player. And so good examples of that, you mentioned them, so mobile device management or enterprise mobility management, as I think the term is increasingly moving towards. This is the ability to take control of your endpoints that you're issuing out to your employees, to your staff, your students, so that you can do posture checking on them, you can deploy applications to them, change settings and restrictions, create geofences, all kinds of cool stuff that you can do there, which IT teams absolutely love. It's very popular in education. I think we're actually the most broadly deployed MDM solution out there right now for that reason. The phone is a very interesting and very new one. So first of all, I'll start off by coming clean and saying this is only available to customers in the United States at this point in time. And this is really because for the first time, we're having to work with a service provider to connect us to the voice equivalent of the internet, the PSTN. And so we're not going to set ourselves up as a service provider ourselves. So we're going to offer customers the ability to work with a service provider. But one of the beautiful things about the Meraki approach is that with the phone, we can go in and do everything we need, including service provider setup, number purchase, and so on, can all be done through the dashboard. So the customer doesn't have to go off to that third party to get set up. So we're trying to streamline the whole experience. And you know, voice is as ripe for disruption as the data networking world has been. In terms of complexity, those complex switches and PBXs and features that I've experienced this again myself. The setup on the voice world, really, we've done too much replication of what was there previously with the old sort of circuit switching world, those huge PBXs we've worked with in the past. So it's just very cumbersome for a lot of people. And this is exactly the same thing that we were so successful disrupting when we started in 2006 with the wireless.
So this is actually kind of important because it's not that Meraki sees itself as an infrastructure company. It is a company that looks at IT problems of complexity and says, let's make things simpler. You've focused on infrastructure so far, but now you're getting into some of these other areas. So that kind of gives us a vision for the future here for Meraki too.
Yeah, it is exactly our mantra now. So we're trying to move the language from cloud-managed networking to cloud-managed IT. And we are constantly on the lookout for other areas where we can make a difference and where a network administrator is going to appreciate seeing a true single pane of glass where he's able to manage not only the network infrastructure, but telephony and potentially other IT solutions as well. So, you know, stay tuned because this is definitely a journey that we're on here. We haven't finished yet.
Simon, so how do I buy Meraki? Do I, you know, the traditional way, I buy the stuff and then off I go. But then a lot of folks have gotten into subscriptions so that I can shift from a CapEx spend to an OpEx spend. What is Meraki offering?
Yeah, so Meraki is all about that sort of license-based model, the subscription-based, if you like. I think that's a term that we don't usually go for directly, but it is essentially that. So you're purchasing the hardware, and then you're buying a license to access the dashboard and get access to 24/7 support and to all of the features that we add to that equipment over its lifetime. So we don't have per-feature licensing in Meraki. Everything is covered by that single license. So we keep it, again, very simple for customers. This is another great example of reminding me of the dark days of my past where I would have to create kit lists, parts lists for network infrastructure, and this stuff goes on for pages. We have a lot of customers who've placed purchase orders with no more than two line items, hardware and license, and really it can be that simple. So it's a really nice model. As far as getting established with Meraki for the first time, a lot of customers come to us through our webinar program. It's been a very popular one for us. It's actually our main number one source of leads into Meraki because we take some time to explain, as I've done during the session, hopefully, give people a broad sense of what it's like to be a network admin, the kind of challenges we're trying to solve. And we love to give people an access point for joining us on those webinars so that they can take the time in their own environment. We have a great trial program as well. So we offer brand new equipment to anybody who wants to try out Meraki, and it's backed up by a number of support engineers based here at headquarters who just basically do nothing else but make sure trial customers are having a good experience. So there are certainly easy ways to get the equipment in front of people, and it's really something we encourage strongly, because you know we obviously spin it very hard. We believe it's a fantastic solution, but for a network administrator who's used to doing things the traditional way, they're not going to be convinced by any kind of webinars, web material that they come across. They need to actually get it into their own environments to try it.
Well, Simon, you just mentioned blogs and webinars and how people can interact with you. You got some URLs you want to throw at us so people can find Meraki a little easier?
Yeah, I would love to share some of those. Thanks. First of all, we're creating a special Meraki packet pushes page. So we'd love you to go along there. You're going to be able to learn a little bit more about Meraki and even probably get your hands on some Meraki swag, which may or may not include our legendary Meraki socks. I'm not sure I can promise the underpants, Greg, but we'll try and get some socks out to people.
Missed opportunity.
At least in some way to fly the flag. So yeah. that website, the URL to note down there is meraki.cisco.com/packet-pushers. Nice and easy. As far as webinars are concerned, everything starts with meraki.cisco.com. So /webinars is going to get you to our webinar program. There's a whole bunch of them. So there are introductory level ones for new network administrators who are maybe brand new to Meraki, maybe like to start things at a nice simple level. Then we do have some more specialized ones that will get into specifics like location analytics and at the MDM platform and so on. Our blog is our main mouthpiece. So if you are interested in following what we're doing, I definitely recommend you go along and subscribe on our blogs, nice and easy. And that is meraki.cisco.com/blog. As far as Twitter is concerned, @Meraki is the main official account. And then I run an account as well, which I try and keep up to date with as much as possible, @MerakiSimon. So I'd love to engage with you guys on there. Please do reach out and say hello, because I'm on there every single day. We have a YouTube channel, so you'll find that easy if you go and search for Meraki on YouTube. The account's actually called Miles Meraki, which is a little piece of history from Meraki's early days. And we, of course, have a Facebook page as well. So pretty well covered out there. You should find us quite easily.
Wow, you guys are everywhere. So some companies, are you social? A little. You guys got it covered. So, Simon, thanks very much for joining us today, for talking to us about Meraki, and for sponsoring the show. We really appreciate it. Greg, any parting thoughts?
You know, there was a time when I was self-employed and managing about 20 customers in my hometown, a small hometown, and the challenge was that I just couldn't cover the ground to get to these places. Like, if something went wrong, I had to go and visit the site. If I could do packet captures and get all the data stored in the cloud, I could probably run my own business in my underpants. And I really think that that's the future, not having to go to customer sites. And that's and this trade-off, right? You might trade off some what I call hero features, or what I wrote an article about it once, called them wanker features. But, you know, that culture is dying. I just want to get my job done and go to the pub and have beer. Speaking of which.
That sounds good to me.
Well, everyone, if we're holding you up from getting to the pub, thank you for listening to Packet Pushers today. And thanks to Cisco Meraki, today's sponsor. You can find this and many more fine, free technical podcasts, along with our community blog, that is real engineers writing about the stuff they do every day, at packetpushers.net. Follow us on Twitter @PacketPushers. You can find us on LinkedIn, like us on Facebook, and rate us on iTunes. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.